We pull up at this conference center. It's about 4 or 5 hours outside of the busy, swarming city of Manila. And when we pull up, there's literally men with like these 50 and 60 foot poles who are harvesting the coconuts. And Dave Darwin says, yeah, they always do that before we come so coconuts don't fall out of the tree and kill anyone. I'm like, that's good. And we drop off our bags in these little huts that we're staying in when we head over to the cafeteria. And I hop in line behind this guy right here. His name's Renzen. And he invites me to come sit at his table and eat with his family. And so we go through line and I get my rice and my spicy chilies and my mystery pork meat. And we sit down and we're eating. And I'm like, so where are you from? And he's like, Bhutan. And I'm like, of course, Bhutan. Everybody knows Bhutan. Yeah. Okay, Bhutan, I had to look it up. It's just under Tibet. It's right next to Nepal, northern India, and there's Bhutan. And this Renzen in Bhutan, he is a church planter, and he came to Manila to get his master's in theology, biblical studies, so that he can go back and not only plant churches, but raise up new leaders in the church so that he can train pastors to take over the churches that he plants. And so I'm like, this is great, great. So tell me, what is it like to be a church planter in Bhutan? Because, you know, at this point, the only time I've actually ever heard of Bhutan is last year I was asked to pray for a pastor who was imprisoned in Bhutan for over a year. And so that's my only context. And he looks at me and says, you know, it can be hard. My brother was put in prison. And that's why it's so important that I go back and train more pastors. And I'm like, oh, it was your brother I was praying for. It was your brother who got thrown in a Bhutanese prison for over a year. And so you thought it'd be a good idea to come and do exactly what he did. And I'm sitting there eating lunch and I'm realizing I'm eating lunch with a man who will likely be beaten and imprisoned for his faith at some point. And it's just humbling, like crushingly, exquisitely humbling for this spoiled American pastor to go there. I was asked by GVF missionaries David and Leah Darwin to do a conference. Here's the crowd here, to speak to this crowd. And I really had no idea what I was signing up for when I initially did it. I was just like, great, I get to go to the Philippines and talk to people. This will be awesome. And then I go there and I find out that this conference is full of like Filipino pastors who work 2 and 3 jobs just so they can continue to be in ministry and provide for their family. It's full of people from Sri Lanka and Bangladesh and Vietnam, these church leaders who have literally been disowned from their families and lost everything just to follow Christ. It's full of people from Bhutan and Indonesia and Pakistan who risk their lives just to share Christ with people. And I'm thinking, what is an American pastor possibly going to say to this crowd? It was humbling, but it was also really beautiful for me. So many of these men and women are headed into like the hardest, most hostile places in the world. Places where to be a Christian means to be disowned by your family, to no longer have a means to take care of yourself financially, to potentially be thrown in prison or lose your life. And yet, they don't choose the easy route, but they choose to go back and share Christ with people. And with their whole lives, these men and women declare to the world that Jesus is worth it. He's worth working 2 and 3 jobs. He's worth going to prison for. He's worth being disowned by your friends and family. He's worth losing your income and your house and, if necessary, your life. Jesus is worth it. And it's just this beautiful thing that these regular, normal people who don't take themselves very seriously are these people who are literally living out the book of Acts before our very eyes. So on Thursday morning, I just got back from this trip, and I'm still like, it feels like the middle of the night right now, so sorry if I stumble around or something, but I get back from these 12 days in the Philippines, with David and Leah Darwin. And today is just going to be the basic, you know, missions report. This is David and Leah at the conference center we're at. And I do hope to give you kind of a snapshot of who they are, who we support, why we support them, what their ministry is, how to pray for them, how to continue to partner for them. And I hope that some of you might even feel called to personally support them, personally pray for them, or maybe support one of the students at their school. I do hope that, but I hope this is also more than a missions report. I hope that these stories stir something in you. I hope they give you a glimpse that this mission of God is bigger and so much bigger than our little lives, that it's something that we can show the world even right here today, that Jesus is worth it. So, David and Leah Darwin, they live in Manila in the Philippines. So just, here's the Philippines, a simple map, just to give you a context. It's like if you were to stick a pin through the globe and it came out the other side of the earth, we're pretty close to the other side of the world right here. So you can kind of see Thailand, China, India, Australia to the south, Philippines. Now, Manila itself is this massive, immense, sprawling city. If you zoom in, you can see city, city, city. It's huge, huge. It's swarming. Like, it's one of those cities where everywhere you look is just cement and roads and buildings on top of buildings and people and scooters and these vehicles called jeepneys and buses and people. And did I say people? It's everywhere. It is this immense city. The actual population of Manila is, they say the official population is about 15 million people in Metro Manila. But unofficially, there are 4 to 5 million, with an M, people who live in places like this. So they're not technically part, they don't own property there, but they're squatters. So 4 to 5 million people live in squatter communities in Metro Manila. And the effect is that on the city that you have 20 million people, you have a city that is larger than Metro New York City, but with like none of the infrastructure. So it's one of the most crowded cities in the world, and the effect is that you have traffic that is truly unbelievable. So just to give you a little context, I won't spend too much time on this, but of my 12-day trip there, I spent about 6 of them in the car. And I wish I was joking. Like, the airport is, we clocked it, it's 21 kilometers from the Darwin's house to the airport, which takes, so that's 13 miles. It takes 4 hours to go to the airport. I can walk, I can speed walk faster. 4 hours. Dave Darwin, last year, the pastor at his home church got ill, heart problem, and they thought he was going to die. Thankfully, the Lord spared him. He's doing better now. But all this to say, they asked Dave if he would step in as the lead pastor at their church. And Dave was like, I would love to. I would love to, because it's only like, you know, 8 miles from their home or something. The problem with that is that would involve him going to the church 2 days a week. And that was going to be commute time. That was going to add something like 10 hours a week in commute time. So in order to make that possible, the church actually had to get him a condominium. So on work days at the church, he goes. This would be like living in Phoenixville and having a condominium in Collegeville. Do you get it? Like, he has to, when on work days, he goes there early and then he has to spend the night because that's how bad traffic is. It's insane. And the fact of the matter is that there's this massive city that is swarming all around, but despite its traffic and crowds and all this craziness that is Manila, it's strategically a beautiful city for this because it's, the Philippines in particular is open to, has good relations with almost every nation in the earth. So it's relatively easy for people from crazy places like Pakistan and Bhutan to get a student visa to be able to come and study there. So because of that, the school located in Metro Manila is just strategically placed so that it's fairly inexpensive and it's great for all these students from all over the world to come to. Just to give you a little bigger context of the Philippines here. The Philippines was colonized. If you want to understand Filipino culture a little bit, you need to understand that it was colonized in the 1500s by the Spanish, which has certain effects. One of the things the Spanish brought with them was a taste for pork. All right? So here's just a few of the dishes. This is braised pork cheek, fried spicy pig ears, Deep-fried pig entrails. I like mine extra spicy. Pig feet. And for those truly special nights, whole suckling pig. Mmm. So, eat lots and lots of pork. Every meal, it's like, what type of pork do you want this time? Great. I'll take the ear. And then, beyond the cuisine, though, the Spanish also imported something else. Catholicism. Yes. Yeah, so, now, let me just qualify this by saying, I'm sure in a country the size of the Philippines, there are sincere, knowledgeable Catholics there. I'm sure there are. It just happens that I didn't meet any, and the fact of the matter is that on the popular level, Catholicism is mixed with a folk religion, is mixed with superstition, is mixed with idolatry on a popular level. So this right here is in the center of this major intersection in Manila. It's this huge, huge statue of Mary, Queen of Heaven. And so there's Mary, obviously, you know, you might find that anywhere. But underneath it, there's a quote. And this is quoting, what is it? 2 Chronicles chapter 7, verse 14. Let me read this to you. If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sins and will heal their land. Do you get this? They just took God speaking to his people that if you turn to me and repent, I will forgive your sins and heal your land. And they just attributed it to Mary. Pray to Mary. She'll forgive your sins. She will heal your land. She can save you. So this time of year is Lent. So they're getting ready to have these big parades, processions, where what they do is thousands and thousands, mostly men, will cut their backs with razors, and then they take sticks and they beat them and walk in procession, and they bleed and bleed and bleed on the way to the cross. And then a select few, those lucky few, will actually go through one step further and actually be crucified. They won't actually, they'll go just short of dying, and then they'll be pulled down. So there's this, like, you know, just a few things off here. Like, they think that Mary will save them of their sins, and they think that they need to crucify themselves. But other than that, it's great. So when you go there, you realize that immediately that in the Filipino culture at large, the gospel itself is missing. It's been twisted. It's been perverted. Like, even in spite of the vast Catholic influence, like, it's just off. So when we were stuck in traffic one day, we came to this place right here, and it's this vast market, thousands, thousands, tens of thousands of people there, and there's this overpass over this highway, and we're sitting there in traffic, and Dave's like, that's the place, that's where it happened. And I'm like, what happened? He's like, 1987, something like that. He was in that place, he was in that market, and he was getting ready to walk over that overpass, and he looked out over this crowd of people, and he felt, in a way that he had never felt before, God was speaking directly to his heart and said, how many of these people know the gospel? How many of these people know Jesus? And he said, that was the moment when I knew I could never leave the Philippines. So for the last 26 years, David Darwin, here's the man himself in his office, David Darwin has been serving in the Philippines primarily at a school called IGSL, which is the International Graduate School of Leadership. This school is specifically targeted to train leaders of leaders. So this is a graduate level school, mostly master's level, a few PhDs. But the whole point is that we're going to take leaders from all over Asia. We're going to train them to influence more leaders, to influence not just individual churches, but whole movements of people. He's the dean of students there. He's the pastor at his home church. And this little school will reach about 20 different nations, about 250 students at a time, but they're expanding hopefully to reach in the next few years up to 500 students at a time. So this is Leah and her element here. She is she's an author, she's a Bible teacher, and she is, if you've ever met Leah, she is just a force of nature. This woman, a big personality, she teaches the Bible to women in a community Bible study, and also at the school she started a program that specifically is designed to help serve and reach women, to help them develop. That a lot of these women come out of a culture that has a less than biblical view of womanhood. A lot of these women come from cultures where women are systemically abused and devalued. So my first lunch when I was there was with Paul and Wilma, great couple from Sri Lanka. And so we're sitting there over lunch and we're talking, and I hear this story. Wilma is, she grew up in Sri Lanka, and she was the fourth child born. So there were three boys and then there was a girl. And in some like Sri Lankan folklore, that's unlucky. You're the unlucky girl. If there's three boys and then a girl's born, you're unlucky. So then, for the rest of her life, her family, every time something bad would happen, blamed her. Tell me, what happens to a young woman who gets blamed for every bad thing that happens to their family? The other thing is that her skin was slightly darker than the other kids in her class and the other people in her family. And in that culture, light skin is the ideal. So everyone looked at her as less than pretty. When she came to the school, she joined Leah's small group. That's her right next to Leah there. And Leah saw her in her outfit and saw her skin tones and everything. And Leah is just one of these big personalities that just can't help saying whatever she's feeling at the moment. And she saw her and she's like petting her hair and stuff and told her, "You're so beautiful." And Wilma later told her that was the first person in her entire life to call her beautiful. And that's the type of impact that Leah is having on these women. So she runs a program, Leah does, to pastors' wives in particular. It's called the PIM program, Partners in Ministry program. And she's ministering to these women strategically so that they will go home and minister to other women in their communities. And through this, she's really reaching thousands of women. She's written a book that was actually one of the best sellers in the region. She's training and influencing thousands of women in that area. Just this last week, it's like 2 days ago, after I left, she went to Thailand to go visit another graduating class that went through this program that's training women on what it means to be a godly woman, how the Bible views you as a woman, and how to serve in ministry. So this is the type of impact that Dave and Leah are having. And this is the Philippines. This is their school. This is the Darwins. This is their training and shaping leaders. This is their way of influencing people from 20 different nations, mainly across Southeast Asia, but all the way into Africa. They all come funnel into this school. But the real story that I just want to leave you with today is really the story of the students. That if you want to know what's happening, how God's working through David and Leah Darwin, you need to know the students. So let me just leave you with two stories here. First one is I met this young woman at the conference. She's on the left-hand side there. Her name is Samantha. Samantha grew up in Sri Lanka. She was one of six kids. When she was still very young, her father died. And when her father died, her mother had to take all six kids, drop them off at extended family, and the mother had to go off into the city to work a job in order to make enough money to provide for the family, send the checks back, was the idea. This happens all over Southeast Asia. This is just kind of normal. Well, in that time, her mother went off and kept sending the checks, but her extended family wasn't too excited about having the kids there. So they actually used them like slave labor, and they basically starved them, barely fed them. They would take the checks from the mother, and they would spend it on themselves. And so the kids did not do very well. In fact, some of them were getting sick and almost dying. The older men in the family regularly abused her and her sisters. And by the time she was a teenager, she was ready to kill herself. She had lost all hope. She had grown up in this Buddhist community where there was this sense of, in some ways, she deserved everything she was getting. Maybe she had done something bad. Who knew? So she was ready to kill herself, and then she went to bed one night. And in the middle of the night, she had a dream. And there was this most beautiful man she had ever seen. And he said, "My name's Jesus. Don't kill yourself. Don't kill yourself. I have plans for you." She woke up in the morning and she didn't know who this Jesus was. But she searched him out. Who is this man? And she finally found this Christian in town who told her about Jesus. 20 years later, she's now serving in ministry alongside of her husband, and they're going back to the same community she started in so that she can tell people about this beautiful man named Jesus. Isn't that great? Isn't that great? My last night there, I had dinner with this couple. This is Shiraz and Sana. Shiraz and Sana, they graduate this spring. They're headed back to Pakistan. Pakistan, according to blasphemy laws, you go to prison for telling anyone about Jesus. Pakistan is a place where Christians are considered second class. A direct quote from them said the only reason that the Pakistanis put up with the Christians there is because they say they need someone to pick up the trash and clean the toilets. Yeah. If that's not extreme enough, Shiraz and Sana, they don't just want to go to Pakistan, they want to go to the northern tribes of Pakistan. The northern tribes of Pakistan are kind of the Wild West of Pakistan, so this is a region where the Pakistani government doesn't even go. This is a region where anyone who goes in there, if you're not part of the tribe, you get killed, all right? This is a region of radical, murderous Islamic sects. Northern Pakistan is not safe for anyone, with only one exception. And that's for people who have a medical background. If you have a medical background, then they'll let you in to do humanitarian aid. And it just so happens that both of them have degrees in nursing. So now they have biblical degrees and degrees in nursing. So they want to go back in and they want to take their family, including their six-year-old son, Isaac, and they want to go into these northern tribes in Pakistan and go where no one else in the world could possibly go to share the gospel with people in northern Pakistan. I get afraid to tell people about Christ here. Yeah. It's a little bit different. So the whole event for me was extremely humbling. At the conference itself, it went fairly well. Traveling internationally, I found it's hard to speak internationally because there's 20 different cultures I'm trying to reach, and like some things that I didn't think were funny at all, everyone laughed at. And some things that I was trying to be funny, I was just like, you're leaving me hanging here. Nothing. Terrible. So, after kind of the first two talks, that I had planned these talks like months in advance. I had actually prepared. I had props that I brought halfway around the world so I could use these props. I was like really planning them out. I had submitted notes, so they had these booklets. It was wonderful. And first two talks went really well, and I was like, okay, this is good. But then halfway through the conference, I just felt like God was saying, that last talk, it's wrong. And I was like, God, what do you mean it's wrong? Can't be wrong. I submitted my notes. I have props. And God was like, it's wrong. It's not the right message. They don't need to hear that message. And I was like, but what am I supposed to do? So I literally the night before my final talk, I just threw out my talk. I was like, what am I going to do? So the next morning I got up and I opened up the book of Acts, Acts chapter 16. And it's kind of a sermon that I've preached something like that here. It's the story of the Philippian church that was started. And the Apostle Paul is he's in Asia Minor, and he gets this vision of a man from Macedonia begging him to come to Macedonia. So he goes to Macedonia, and he's excited. He's got this team of missionaries with him, and he's like, what are we going to do? We're going to change the world for Christ. So they show up in Philippi and find this utterly godless, hostile environment. And they're just desperately looking for someone, anyone who could possibly be open to the gospel. And they find no one. And then finally God leads them to this little place of prayer. And what do they find? A woman's Bible study. That's it. Not a single man in the town is interested. And then at that woman's Bible study, the Apostle Paul meets Lydia. And she and her whole household come to Christ. And God starts a movement with a woman. It's shocking in that context. But a woman's not enough. God has someone else in mind. And Paul's walking one day and he meets this demon-possessed slave girl. And she has some crazy Pythian spirit in her that she can foretell the future. And Paul gets so annoyed with her, the text says, so annoyed that he casts the demon out of her and says, in the name of Jesus Christ, you'd be free. And this little girl comes to Christ. So God starts his work with a woman and then an annoying little demon-possessed slave girl. And that gets Paul and Silas in trouble. They get beaten, thrown in prison, and they're in prison in the middle of the night. They're singing, praising God. There's an earthquake. The doors are break open, and the jailer sees this, thinks everyone's escaped. He's getting ready to kill himself because it's a shame and honor culture. So he's going to kill himself because it would be a great dishonor, a great shame if he had let his prisoners be released on his watch. And the Apostle Paul says, don't do it. Stop. And that's when he says, none of us have escaped. You don't have to do this. And what does the jailer do? This man who's only known honor and law, and he breaks into a puddle. And he says, what must I do to be saved? I just have to have what you have. And the Apostle Paul says, believe in the Lord Jesus Christ and you will be saved. And that's the Philippian church, right? That's the story. That's what I preached that day. And I sat there and I didn't quite know why God had me preach that. But then Dave Darwin got up and said, anyone here who feels like God spoke to them in that, like God, they needed to hear that. We just asked, we're going to have the faculty stand up around the corner. And if you need prayer, we want you to come up and we're going to pray for you. And almost every single student came up. Grown men just weeping that they would have the courage to face beatings and imprisonment like the Apostle Paul. Women who are saying, I feel like God's calling me into ministry, but I have no idea what that means. How can God possibly use a woman? And almost every single woman in there felt like that little slave girl with that dark, dark past, like they'd been set free, but they're still haunted by these memories. This is who we have the privilege of serving. The book of Acts is happening today, right now in our world, that there are people right now all over the world that are literally living out the book of Acts, and they're asking me to pray for them, and they're asking you to pray for them. So church, this is what we get the privilege to be part of. This is the mission of God, that in the most unexpected ways, he's working all over our globe. The men and women who are willing to give up everything because Jesus is worth it. Because Jesus is worth it. I walked away from the trip thinking, one, I'm a complete sissy. Two, I don't want to eat pork for a while. But three, I desperately want to be a person, I want to be a father, I want to be a husband, I want to be a pastor who with my whole life declares to the world, Jesus is worth it. It's like, I don't have the same thing, struggles they have, but we have the same God they have. We have the same mission they have. That I want to pray just as hard and I want to give just as sacrificially and I want to share the gospel with just as much courage. Let's be that, church. Let's be that.